This is Cedric Wilson, and you're listening to Roster Watch. Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast, brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap, and joining me today, a special guest you've never heard on the pod. I think, Davis, I think we've had you on the Sirius show at least once before. Now, his name is Davis Maddock. He is of the Swole cast, of the Take cast, and also over at Sports Grid. You can find him on Twitter at Davis Maddock, M-A-T-T-E-K. Davis, what the hell's going on, brother?
Hey, not much is going on. Very excited. Yeah, I have been on the Sirius show before, never been on the podcast. So glad to be invited. Looking forward to chatting.
Well, we know that you have a daily show you do from 11 to 2. So we got to get you out of here quick. So we'll just rapid fire through a couple of these questions. I know you've been doing a bunch of best ball stuff? I figure if it seems like everybody's starting to talk about it now. Have you gotten into the best ball drafts yet?
Yeah, I've been cranking them out on Underdog, and then also Drafters has a championship, which works a little bit differently. So Underdog cuts down in the playoff weeks, but Underdog is week 1 through 17, total points wins. So I enjoy those different formats. But yeah, I've definitely been grinding those out.
I feel like I have to qualify it, because back when we started when we put our first cheat sheet in February, you have people come on and you ask them about what they're doing in best ball. They're just like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? I'm not doing that yet. And it feels like everybody's kind of starting to get into it now. And Underdog, clearly, Underdog is doing a marketing blitz, man. But it seems like it's working, because they're getting more and more players over there, and it actually is a really cool setup. They have the huge tournament, $1 million first prize. It feels like stacking has become something that's become a lot more popular. I think that Mike Leone is a dude who we had on the podcast last year who, you know, was talking about it then when it wasn't quite as mainstream. It feels like everybody's talking about it now. Do you have a stacking strategy or a specific stack or anything that you kind of look at whenever you're getting into these best ball drafts as far as the big tournaments?
Yeah, I definitely think that in the big tournaments, you are wanting to stack at least one team, probably two if you're able to do it. You know, kind of the way I think about that is I'd like to have one higher price quarterback that I stack. So, you know, CeeDee Lamb and Dak, Lamar Jackson and Marquise Brown, Patrick Mahomes and Mecole Hardman and Byron Pringle. I think one of the things I've noticed, though, is that finding that second stack is a little bit more difficult, because a lot of those quarterbacks that we think have a little bit of rushing upside, like, you know, Trey Lance, Jalen Hurts, even Trevor Lawrence, those guys are getting a little bit more expensive. So this is going to sound so disgusting as I say it, but Daniel Jones is very cheap in these drafts right now. He didn't run very much last year, had only 12 touchdowns all of last year, but they add Kenny Galladay, they draft Kadarius Toney, Saquon Barkley is going to be healthy, Evan Ingram is theoretically going to be healthy. And Daniel Jones was a good fantasy quarterback as a rookie, but then bad last season. And you can take Daniel Jones in kind of the 12th round of these drafts or so, and then Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, Kadarius Toney, all of those guys you can basically select with, you know, 16th, 17th, 18th round picks. So those backdoor New York Giants stacks have kind of become part of my process.
Do you set out with, and that's one where you could actually set out for, because you're like, man, I know all these guys are going to be available. But do you ever kind of find yourself in a situation where you're like, well, I've already taken Jamar Chase or something like that. Maybe now I'm going to need to focus in maybe and push up Joe Burrow up a little bit. Like for me, when I do my stacks, I feel like I just kind of see, I want to take the best players I can at first and say, all right, well, now that I've got this core of, you know, four or five players, now that I have this, like, how could I make a stack occur now with this? Is that how you do it? Because I feel like whenever I do that, it leaves me out of the tubes of the super high end stuff, like the Mahomes Kelsey stuff, or the, you know, like you mentioned, Dak and CeeDee. I mean, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper have basically the same ADP at this point on Underdog. How do you feel about that? You have a Dak Prescott jersey here behind you. For people who aren't watching, you can imagine Davis with a Dak jersey behind him. Just completely off the – just a completely new subject. What do you think about Amari and CeeDee Lamb's ADP being that close for redraft? I could understand it for Dynasty. It feels – how do you feel about that for redraft this year?
So I have CeeDee ranked ahead of Amari, which is kind of – they're kind of flip-flop. So Cooper goes on average about 5-6 picks ahead of Lamb. I think that the natural transition we're going to see with the Cowboys is that this is going to be Cooper's last year on the team. They have an out on his deal. They can move on from him for no dead money at the end of this year. Basically, it ends up being a team option. And CeeDee Lamb is obviously cost controlled for the next four seasons. I think CeeDee Lamb is a little bit better than Cooper.
And he's better.
And Gallup is also cost controlled. They also have Cedric Wilson, Noah Brown, Simi Fehoko, that's not how you say his name. I just messed it up. But they have alternative guys there. And also I expect that when Cooper leaves, they will probably either add someone in the draft this upcoming season or in free agency. So I think the natural transition is to Lamb being the number one wide receiver this season and Cooper pretty clearly being the number two, with Gallup kind of staying in his role. What you said though is interesting, because obviously the best stack you could have would be Kelsey and Mahomes. You fill tight ends. Kelsey was like the number one overall player amongst receiving guys in value last year. Mahomes obviously is incredible, but you're having to pay through the nose to get those stacks. So, you know, it's very unlikely, I think, that the Mahomes Kelsey stack or the, you know, the Dak Lamb stack, those are very pricey. And so it's just harder for those teams to win the overall tournament because you're paying full cost. So that is why, you know, those secondary stacks do end up being so important. But to your example, you know, if I do take Jamar Chase or T. Higgins early, I'm definitely looking to take Burrow around ahead of ADP for sure to close that stack out.
And I never thought we would get a goddamn New York Giants stack take on here, but I love it. It's kind of true. You can get all those guys at the very end. You don't have to plan for that at all. You don't have to plan ahead really at all. You can just know that later on in the draft, these guys are going to be available, and there's nothing I have to do with this beginning part of my draft to be able to make it happen. What about whenever, you know, you mentioned earlier some Mahomes, you know, a guy you could stack him with is, if you don't want to go the super expensive way, you mentioned Mecole Hardman earlier. And I know from listening to the Swolecast, I believe that you're a bit of a Mecole Hardman apologist. Is that true? Yeah, it seems like it's true. It seems like it's true. So there's been some talk behind the scenes here with our company on Slack and stuff like that as we're putting together our cheat sheets. Byron, who's never been a Mecole Hardman guy, is starting to do all this Mecole Hardman talk. I'm like, man, I hate Mecole Hardman. He's been such a bust. But he keeps giving me a good convincing argument, saying like, look, I know he was drafted as Tyreek Hill insurance. I know he hasn't been any good. They don't give me volume, but he's the number two receiver for him now. It sure feels like it. So now is it finally Mecole Hardman season, whenever nobody's looking?
Well, it almost has to be. So I do think we saw a transition with the Chiefs offense last year where Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill accounted for about 60% of their pass attempts, which is a lot. But then, you know, you factor in, well, they're throwing to the running backs, they're throwing to Darrell Williams, they're throwing to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're throwing to DeMarcus Robinson, they're throwing to Byron Pringle. The rest of the passing work was really segmented out. However, for this season, their wide receiver depth chart after Hardman and Tyreek, it's DeMarcus Robinson, who we just know is not any good. It's 28-year-old Byron Pringle, who is an undrafted free agent.
He got old quick.
Yeah. And then they have rookie Cornell Powell, who is like a backup special teamer at Clemson. And then they have this guy who's like a meme player. He's 6'6", 240. His name is either Jody or JoJo Fortson. I don't remember. He was a practice squad player for them last year. So it's just very thin in terms of where the targets are going to go. And so I think you kind of have to pencil Hardman in for, you know, 90 to 110 targets in that Chiefs offense. And I mean, I don't know. It's just, it feels like if he can't do it this year, he's going to be out of the league pretty soon because he's got this prime opportunity.
I was just looking at some of the, speaking of the Swolecast, I know how into wide receiver cornerback matchups you guys are around there, but I was just looking at some of the cornerbacks that Kansas City is going to face. And so they get the AFC West. When I was looking at it, I got the NFC East, but they also get the AFC West twice. And the Chargers all of a sudden are looking like they're going to be dependent on like Asante Samuel to be their outside corner all of a sudden with those guys. The Raiders are just old and terrible in their secondary. They'll get those guys twice. So I think the Mecole Hardman stuff, I'm beginning to become kind of interested in the Mecole Hardman stuff as a dude who's never really been interested before. Okay, wanted to ask you a couple questions about the pertaining to the Green Bay Packers, because Aaron Rodgers is clearly, I don't know, what do you think is going to happen with Aaron Rodgers? Gun to your head, do you think he's there next year?
I do think he is, because I think that if it was desperate enough that the Packers management wanted to save themselves, they would have traded him on draft night to the Denver Broncos for the number 9 overall pick. They would have selected Justin Fields or Mac Jones, I guess. And they would have, because I think, by the way, the narrative that underpins all of this is they realized they made a mistake with the Jordan Love selection, that it was a panic selection, that it wasn't well thought out, and that Jordan Love couldn't beat out Tim Boyle after a year of practice to be the backup quarterback. And so I think they'll give him whatever contract he needs. I think probably the most likely thing is that either Rodgers sits out or that he's on the roster, because I think what do you get for Aaron Rodgers in a trade now? You know, that pick that the Broncos made, it's worthless. It's Patrick Surtain, who I guess the group Packers would want, but I mean, are you trading Aaron Rodgers for Patrick Surtain? Probably not. I don't know. It would feel bizarre to me. So I think the most likely scenario is either that Rodgers is on the Packers or is holding out to begin the season. I just don't see an obvious trade for them right now. Maybe Oakland or Las Vegas is the one team. You know, you do the Derek Carr and a pick swap or something like that. But even that doesn't feel that likely.
All right. So gun to your head, holding out or playing?
I think playing, because I think that Rodgers knows the record books, and I think he wants to chase Manning's records. I think he wants to chase, Brady's records. I think he wants to chase all of Favre's records. Like, I think that he has the long lens and knows, like, I need to get all these numbers and I need to be accumulating to get my spot in the history books.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Okay, if that's where you're going to be basing your expectations, or at least your evaluations of his associated players and stuff like that, does that mean that you're going after Davante Adams and guys like this in Dynasty? Because I'm worried about Davante Adams in Dynasty. Are you going after him? Are you trying to get him at a discount right now? Or are you just saying, I don't want the headache?
The guy I'm actually using to leverage this situation is Amari Rodgers. Because if Amari Rodgers goes to a situation with a bad quarterback or a bad offense or whatever, I'm not that interested. I didn't view him as that special of a player. But very specifically in Green Bay, one, they've had a ton of success with kind of gadget, small, like short but stocky guys, right? Randall Cobb, Ty Montgomery. If you really want to turn back the clock, James Jones was kind of that same model of a player. You know, James Jones was, I think, 5'11", but, you know, about 205 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I think that he could be the number two wide receiver pretty early on. Rodgers obviously hates Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Alan Lazard was a practice squad player for them for a while. He did play pretty well last year, but we've seen Alan Lazard, Robert Tonyan, you know, Mercedes Lewis, these guys, they all perform not because they're great, but because Rodgers is very good. And so Green Bay just patches those holes with whoever. And I think Amari Rodgers is very likely better than all of those guys.
Oh God, he's so much better than those guys for sure. Yeah. And I like the mention of, my comp form was Randall Cobb. Just like, I can't believe that guy weighs 213 pounds, man, in that body. He really, really is just a thick dude. But like, as far as if you had to take a stand on Devontae Adams in a dynasty league, or if, let's say you own Devontae Adams in a dynasty league, would you be listening to offers right now for 2021 first round picks? Like, would that make sense to you given the rookie landscape here in 2021?
So he's 28. I would be looking to sell him. Like, I think a great example of a deal you could do is Devontae Adams for T. Higgins and a 2022 first or something like that. You kind of buy the years a little bit. I would be viewing that, you know, Mike Evans, similar, you know, kind of once these guys get Julio Jones, you probably could, I don't know if you could get a first and a prospect for Julio Jones these days, but I do kind of like to do that with these guys once they hit 28, 29, is trade them for a good but not great prospect, you know, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, something like that, and then a future first. I think those are fair deals to be made right now.
Okay, so speaking of these quarterbacks, one more quick one before I have to ask you a couple of crypto related questions. If you had to, and you know what, there could actually be odds on this. There could be, Davis, are there odds on this on DraftKings for the first rookie quarterback to make a start between Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields? I would like to hear your take on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's an actual betting market for that. Do you have a lean on which one, or if we can trust any of these guys to play the majority of the snaps this season?
So I think in a weird way, it's actually going to be Trey Lance. I think that the 49ers kind of hid the scent on this pretty well. I would say it's got a chance to be Justin Fields, but the week one, the Bears open up against the Rams. I don't think there's any way they throw Justin Fields out there for his first NFL game against the Rams.
Is that at home?
It's on the road too. It's on the road. So on the road in Los Angeles against the Rams defense, I don't think they toss him out there for that. And I think there's a chance also that Jimmy is traded in one of these deals. Jimmy's just got to be so unhappy. Like, he started a Super Bowl, you know, 20 months ago, and now he's backed up behind a guy from North Dakota. Like, it's got to not be a happy situation for him. I don't think we see Mac Jones for a while. I think that basically they ride Cam until either Cam gets hurt or they start losing. It would be interesting that week four game when the Bucks come to play against the Patriots. Maybe that's if they lose that game, you know, obviously the Patriots fans are going to start murmuring and being very unhappy. So yeah. I think probably after that game is when we start thinking about Mac Jones.
No, that's a good one. I guarantee you after week four, they're going to be saying to throw in Mac, because yeah, that's the kind of thing that they'll just get everybody up there on big tilt if Brady comes in and kicks their ass. Okay. So what is take this question and how you would interpret it. As far as the current drafts right now, what player is the Dogecoin of current best ball drafts? And you can take that as you.
It's, to me, it's got to be Devonta Smith, because in non super flex rookie drafts, he's going pretty early. He's going on average ahead of Bateman. You know, he's going on average. He's going ahead of Jalen Waddle a lot of the time. And I know he won the Heisman. I know he scored like an insane amount of touchdowns and everything, but just the comps for a guy who didn't really produce until his final season, underweight, didn't even run at his pro day. It's just none of it sounds good. None of it inspires a ton of confidence for me. And maybe I'm wrong, right? And I've been wrong about Dogecoin the whole time too, right? Dogecoin just keeps going up and everyone's making money off of it. but me. So maybe that's the comp. Maybe the comp is that this is what I'm wrong about, just like I was wrong about Dogecoin. But to me, the fundamentals of buying Dogecoin don't make any sense, and the fundamentals of buying Devonta Smith don't make any sense to me either.
I mean, that's how I meant the question. I'm just like, which one of these guys do you see as the biggest shit coin that doesn't make any sense? But that's what's happening. But you know what? You could take that as saying, like, which one am I going to buy a bunch of and make a shitload of money on because I'm an idiot? And, you know, it could be. I think that that's a good one, Devonta Smith, for sure. Okay. Speaking of coins that could possibly be shit coins or could possibly be good and make you money, do you use the Brave browser? And do you know anything about basic attention token? Because I use Brave for the privacy aspects and stuff. I didn't care. I didn't give a shit about some kind of token, but they started sending me these tokens for my attention and stuff like that. You get a wallet for them. I've started to think that more and more people using the Brave browser, that maybe there could be something to this. And now I've seen they have basic attention token on Coinbase. Do you have any thoughts on this, the Brave browser and that?
So it's funny you mention it. I actually do use the Brave browser, but I don't really care about the privacy or the ad tracking stuff. I mean, I do, like on my iPhone, I opt out of the tracking and the analytics and everything. I don't love having targeted advertisements because I'm very susceptible to them. Like, I can't even log on Instagram without spending $80 on shorts. Like, I'm the worst at it. But I do actually use the Brave browser because of the basic attention token. I wanted to start earning the basic attention token. Not like that's a coin that's going to the moon or anything, but it's a little bit that you can swap into Bitcoin or into ETH, you know, whenever you feel like doing so. So I actually do use the Brave browser, and I mean it's a great way to earn a little bit of crypto and a great way to kind of stick it to the companies trying to track all your cookies across the internet.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think it's cool. Like I said, I started using it because I wanted the privacy of it and everything like that. But it's crazy that these other browsers that people don't realize, well, you know, they're actually monetizing you, whereas this is an actual browser that in some ways it pays you. It's really wild. So that's cool to hear. It feels like more and more people are kind of using it. As far as, so you're a Bitcoin maximalist.
Well, I know this much. I kind of used to be. I am, and I've had Ethereum the whole time. I'm just like Bitcoin. I've never sold it. But I guess I'm a Bitcoin maximalist in today's economy because I'm not selling my Bitcoin to get more Ethereum, which I guess kind of makes me a maximalist in today's situation.
Well, it feels like some people are kind of doing that right now. It feels like people I've talked to, it's more and more people talking to, like, they're getting more and more Ethereum, maybe not as much Bitcoin. If for somebody setting up recurring buys, how do you feel about how the allocation of that should go? Not that we're financial advisors or anything like that, but I'm just curious. I mean, I know you've been into crypto for a long time. I'm just kind of curious to hear your thoughts on how you would handle that.
So I'll speak to myself personally. I have four recurring buys. I have a Monday morning recurring buy for Bitcoin, Wednesday morning recurring buy for Bitcoin and Ethereum, Saturday morning recurring buy for Ethereum, and then Sunday morning is Bitcoin and Ethereum. And that's how I have it set up. And it's roughly 50-50. I'd have to go look at the exact numbers. Maybe it's 60-40 one way or the other. But then also the other thing is just any day when it dips down 5-10%, I just buy a little bit more. And I try and be as disciplined with that as I can. For me, the game is more about getting rid of US dollars than it is accumulating one more than the other. But also, I've not sold any Bitcoin for ETH up until this point.
So, but can you explain though? Can you explain to me, maybe from somebody who's a little bit more into the crypto culture and stuff, like, why does it feel like people are getting more bullish on Ethereum right now?
So right now, it's because we are finally starting to see the promise of Ethereum from when it came out back in 2015. We're finally starting to see the features of the network that it promised being used. Because for a while, it really functioned the same way as Bitcoin. It was a way to remit money online without the use of financial institutions, which was the big thing that Bitcoin always promised to do. You know, you can hold money, you can save money, you can send money without using a bank. But Ethereum had all these other promising applications, and they sounded like pipe dreams, right? Like the ability to execute smart contracts, the ability to lend money, the ability to borrow money, the ability to join pools of people who are borrowing and lending money. You know, and those were all things that sounded fake, but they're happening right now. I mean, you can borrow and lend Ethereum via smart contract with millions of other people, to millions of other people, and it actually works. The smart contracts actually work and execute as they were meant to do. And that, you know, the key for that, or the term for it, is decentralized finance, which is, you know, basically the world of finance without central banks, without the Federal Reserve. And it actually exists now, which I certainly didn't ever think it would happen this fast.